It's News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
And that was David Bowie with Changes. I don't know if that just came up randomly on the computer or whether that was Sean's way of acknowledging that I just bought a very expensive David Bowie Christmas ornament for my Christmas tree. But I'm glad either way that we got to listen to a little bit of David Bowie right off the top. This is The Rundown. I am Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards. He is off decorating his Christmas tree with hand-blown Christmas ornaments, and he won't be back until January. I'll be here all this week, a little bit next week, and the week after. But it's going to be a really fun show, News Talk Tonight. Tonight we've got 4 hours of fun coming up, and well, maybe not all fun, but certainly 4 hours of interesting stuff. And we're going to kick things off with The Rundown, and I have two guests I want to welcome in. Carl Dockstader is the host of One Dish, One Mic, which airs on News Talk 610, 1290, and AM 800, and Ken Eastwood is the host of the morning show on News Talk 1290. Gentlemen, how are you?
Super. How are you, Richard?
Great, thanks. Thanks for joining me.
I'm happy to.
So we are just moments away from Zelensky speaking to the joint meeting of Congress. The president of the Ukraine is making a dramatic visit to Washington. It's his first known trip outside Ukraine since the Russian invasion began in February. And this is a big deal. He's already met with President Biden. He's about to make this speech. There's a lot of money that could be coming his way, which would benefit the country as they fight off the Russian invasion. But I want to ask, and Carl, why don't I start with you? Are the benefits of traveling during wartime, do they outweigh the risks? Churchill traveled all the way through the Second World War to various countries, but this seems risky. Now, Zelensky has said that they used American support, U.S. support, to control the situation while he was traveling, but it has to be a risky move.
I think it's a risky move, but I also think that he's been an exceptional figurehead leader, and to show his people that he's not afraid and that he's going to go and do what it takes. And it's no coincidence that it's the United States of America that he's going to first. I think the United States obviously has a lot of abilities and power that other nations don't have. And this is a wise move.
Yeah, he has said that he went to the United States because we have the same values. And that is one of the things I would imagine that he's going to be really emphasizing during this speech that he's about to make during the meeting of Congress. It's just being called to order now, so that'll be happening any second now. Ken, what do you make of this trip? Have you been following this today? The press conference and everything sort of just happened, but have you had time to sort of analyze and drink some of this in?
A bit. And yeah, I think what occurs to me, and it's interesting, you note that President Zelensky, claims they have the same, the same values as the United States. I think this has very little to do with values and very much to do with $45 billion at stake here, which would be a huge amount of money to help the defense of Ukraine keep going. What shocks me, though, is, and as you said, this is only just about to begin, but we've heard some rumblings of dissent from particularly the Republican side, and it boggles my mind. I don't know how we think back to when the war in Ukraine began, when Russia invaded, and there was that solidarity that everyone was together thinking, this is wrong, we need to stand up to this to the degree that we can without escalating it into a world war. But now, so many months later, here we are, and we've got Republicans who are set to vote against giving support to Ukraine, and not just financial support, some technical support as well.
It's baffling to me. It really is baffling to me. In fact, one congressman said that he would personally make sure that any Republican that voted for this, to give the money to Ukraine, that they would never get another bill or any legislation passed for the next 4 years. I mean, I don't understand this at all. Let's move on. So digital ID programs in Ontario have been delayed for a very long time. We were supposed to get them a while ago. They're going to become the norm all across the country. So I thought it would be interesting to talk about this a little bit. It was set to launch this program in 2021, and it means that you would have a very official government ID on your phone, so you wouldn't have to carry the card around anymore. And I guess the question that I have is this really any more convenient? I think that with the amount of times that I've lost my phone, that I'd rather just have the card, maybe have it on my phone as well, but I want a card as well, something that I can touch. Is that a function of my age, Carl, or is that just being cautious and not wanting to lose my phone and therefore lose my identity cards?
I'm not going to comment on your age because it's radio, so nobody can really know. But no, I went from resisting going, oh, I don't want this ID on, like the ArriveCan app. I hated that thing. I hated it. And then once I realized that like the customs officers loved it, it made my transition a lot smoother. And all I had to do was have my phone with me. I was like, oh, actually, this is really convenient to me. So no, I'm waiting for it. Like I have my phone. I have all my stuff on there. I want all my stuff on there. I have no need for a wallet with 400,000 cards in it, including government ID. And I'm less likely to have my wallet somewhere than to have my phone. And I think I'm in the majority with that.
Huh. Ken, do you would you have a phone and a wallet? Are you part of that majority?
Yeah. So currently what I have is I've got the little pouch that's attached to the case on the back of my phone. Right. So and in that I've got four cards. I've got a credit card, a debit card, and two pieces of Ontario government issued ID. The credit card and the debit card are already on my phone, so that's redundant. If I had an app with my government ID, then I would immediately do away with this thing that is jutting from the back of my phone. And I actually find the opposite is true, Richard. If I do happen to lose my phone and happen to lose my ID, I can track my ID. As opposed to if you just lose your wallet's probably just gone.
Yeah, I've never lost my wallet, and I've lost my phone. That's where
See,
I sit on this.
If your ID was attached to your phone, you might not lose it quite as much. It might be a little more conscientious.
It's true. So have either of you done much traveling during the pandemic over the last few years?
Absolutely not.
Nope. And Ken, no. I'm curious here because we are about to hit a bunch of very bad weather, and I'm starting to hear stories like this one of a man who's driving from Toronto to Newfoundland because his flight was canceled. And I think probably over the next, we've seen it on the West Coast, and I think probably when the big snow blows through Toronto and most of Southern Ontario tomorrow, we're going to see it here as well. And I'm just wondering about the length to which either of you might have gone to make sure that you get where you're going. Have you, like this man who's driving from Toronto to Newfoundland, Carl, have you ever done anything kind of that extreme? Have you gone way, way, way out of your way to get home for Christmas or to get to your destination?
I haven't. I wouldn't. I would just say I'm sorry it didn't work out and go back to my comfortable home.
Right.
Just turn around and go right back. We did. So we flew. I think the longest we ever went out of our way was flying back from London. And this was several years ago, pre-pandemic, flying back to Toronto from Gatwick. And we got rerouted to Ottawa. So we ended up taking a bus, and that was not fun. A bus from Toronto to Ottawa that was not scheduled. So it ended up being a school bus.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Which was just, and then of course you're stopping every 15 minutes to let people off, and just ended up being one of the worst trips ever.
You're listening to The Rundown on News Talk tonight. My guests, Carl Dockstader and Ken Eastwood, will stay with me through the break. When we come back, we're going to talk about prepaying for meals. Would you prepay at a fancy restaurant for the steak tartare that you're thinking about having? We'll figure that out on the other side of the break. I'm Richard Krause, in for Jim Richards. News Talk tonight. Stay with me. Lots more to come.
You're listening to News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards, who is busy brining a turkey for Christmas dinner, so he couldn't be here tonight. But I'll be here for the next 3.5 hours, telling you about all the news of the day, and then we're going to meet some really super cool, interesting people a little bit later on, like the two people who are my guests for this feature that we like to call The Rundown. This is where we take a look at the big news stories of the day and get some expert opinions on them. Joining me from the One Dish, One Mic show, which airs on News Talk 610, 1290, and AM 800, is Carl Dockstader and Ken Eastwood, host of The Morning Show on News Talk 1290. Welcome back. Thanks for sticking through the break.
You bet.
Thanks for having us. I'm not actually an expert in anything. I'm just a talk show host.
Well, you know what? It's radio. You don't have to tell people that. You look like
I am definitely an expert.
You look like an expert on radio. That's what I'm saying. So there's a restaurant in Vancouver that is a kind of high-end place. It's earned a Michelin star. It's a Quebecois-themed bistro. It's called St. Lawrence, and they've been very busy during the holiday season, of course. Most restaurants in normal times are quite busy. There's apparently what's happening here is that people are really going out again this year in a way that they haven't been for the last little while. And so lots of reservations are made, and unfortunately, sometimes, often, people don't show up. And so you've got a table that just sits empty that is costing the waiters money and tips, and it's costing the restaurant money in lost sales. So this chef has said, well, I'm going to get people to prepay. And you have a $175 set menu on this menu, on this in this restaurant. So what he's done is said, well, you've got, five people. I need $175 from each of you, and that will guarantee your reservation. And the food will be perfect. The service will be perfect. Gratuities all in, but you need to pay up front. Now, if you have a reasonable expectation of not being able to show up, you can cancel 48 hours in advance. Other than that, he says there are a few exceptions, and they're going to keep that money if you don't show up. How do you feel about prepaying? Carl, let's start with you. I don't know that I love prepaying for the whole whack. I could see paying a down payment on a large party of 10 or 20. But if there was just four of us, I don't know if I want to prepay that.
I want to be really respectful to listeners here, but I am 1,000% on the side of the restaurant. Yep. I'm a former recovering hospitality employee myself, working in the kitchen. Customers are awful, and they will do awful things, and they don't care about the poor staff that are working back there. We're just means to an end. They'll use and abuse us. So, yes, charge them. Charge them as much as possible. I love it.
Well, it's interesting. It says, I did this for a long time, too. I was a bartender and worked in restaurants for a very long time. It was a long time ago. And we toyed with the idea of taking a deposit because we were getting large tables that would book and then not show up or show up hours late and kind of have a disregard for how the restaurant really worked, And it was decided not to do that. But I think times have changed. And after the pandemic, Ken, restaurants, I think, really have to take care of every penny that comes in and really look after it and guarantee they're going to make that money. What's your take on this?
Oh, I absolutely agree. I think a lot of restaurants, they saw just how thin that margin is on which they operate. And they know that, they've got to make every dollar count. They've got to make every table count. So I respect that. They're right to want to make sure that those tables are filled. From a customer perspective, I actually kind of like it. I like the idea of a set menu to begin with and the all-in price. And, part of me wants to say, I think this works for a high-end high demand restaurant. But at the same time, I'm thinking, well, wait, the restaurants I go to already do this. You pay at the first window and then you drive up and you get your food at the next
window. If you go to Tim Hortons, you're paying up front. Absolutely.
All right. So I don't know. It just kind of makes it feels weird to me that restaurants are that one consumable that you consume and then you pay for. Mm-hmm. I mean, aside from, you know, services where you're billed later, what other, I mean, imagine you go, let's use a movie perspective for you, yeah. Richard. Imagine you went to a theater, watched a movie, really enjoyed it, and then you're asked to go line up so you can pay for it. It makes no sense.
And if it was, there have been a few of these like 3.5 hour movies that I've had to sit through recently, and I'm telling you, they're not getting any more just because they're longer. And in fact, I would even probably want to pay less for some of them that I've seen that have clocked in over 3 hours long. There is a new thing that's happening, and I think it's kind of cool. Maybe it brings up some nostalgic feelings for you, but adults are buying more children's toys. Kidults, they're called, that buy them. And it's something that I think people are turning to because it makes them feel kind of nostalgic. There's a story here about a woman named Elizabeth who has started buying the American Girl dolls again that she always wanted when she was a kid. I don't know what exactly I would buy. Maybe some G.I. Joes. I'm not sure what it would be for me. But Carl, is this just an exercise in nostalgia, or does it say something about us coming out of the pandemic that we were sitting around lonely and locked down, and we just want things that are just going to make us feel better? Is that part of what it is?
I think that's a huge part, and I love this trend. I got these notes, and I stole it for my own roundtable when I was hosting the drive earlier today. So kudos to my guest. Jessica is going to buy herself a glowworm. The other guest had bought himself Green Bay Packers figurines. Wow. And I want those giant, big rubber wrestlers from the 80s. Like, I want one so bad right now. Like, I want a big Ultimate Warrior that's, like, indestructible and way too big.
And, Ken, what would you grab? If you could.
So I'm not even remotely embarrassed to say I am 100% a kidult. For the last, oh gosh, 5, maybe 6 years, every year I get Lego for Christmas. And Dad sits down Christmas Day, and I put, last year it was a Lego Millennium Falcon cool. that I'm looking at in my office right now.
I understand a Yoda
over there. I got an R2-D2. I mean, not to mention my serious collection of video games. Having said that, I do feel bad for the kid who, you know, sneaks into mom's closet, you know, sees that hidden PS5 in the bottom of the closet, and then only to find out Dad unwraps it on Christmas morning. Yeah. It's Dad's gift. Not for you, Johnny. Sorry, buddy.
I understand that the Millennium Falcon Lego set takes almost 4 years to put together.
It was a long time, Richard. It was, I think it was 500 pieces, if I remember correctly. But it was a lot. Yeah, that was a bit. That was more than an afternoon, Christmas afternoon. That was like a whole week between Christmas and New Year's project.
Yeah, I think the thing that I would want, and I can't remember what it was called, but just from a completely nostalgic point of view, when I was a kid, there was a G.I. Joe that was a villain, I think, and you could take the top of his head off and see his brain. And I thought it was the coolest thing. Like, he was probably called Dr. Brainiac or something. I don't know. But I would want one of those just to see if it's as cool as I remember it being. We've just got about a minute left here. Let's talk about electric cars. So Canada is mandating that 1/5 of vehicle sales need to be electric by 2026. We're talking about 3 years from now. Do you think, Carl, that is realistic? Do you think that will happen?
I think you have to make it happen. Follow California in their lead, and you mandate this stuff, and it's going to go that way. So, yeah, let's go for it. Let's be a leader in this.
Yeah, I'll tell you, when I was in San Francisco recently, every car, the streets were weirdly quiet because every car was electric. Mm. And so you weren't hearing engines and car noise. It was a kind of a strange thing. Ken, what's your take?
I think it's a lofty goal, but yeah, like Carl said, you know, you need to set lofty goals to achieve mm-hmm. lofty targets. But I mean, this is the Canadian federal government, particularly when it comes to things like this, like climate targets, they have a tendency to set targets that are unachievable. I mean, and we just don't achieve them. So I don't have a high level of confidence that we will achieve this. But, you know, the excuse that the infrastructure is not there. Well, the infrastructure will come as the vehicles come. It's just a matter of time.
Thanks to the two kidults on the panel today, Carl Dockstader, host of One Dish, One Mic, which airs on News Talk 610, 1290 and AM 800, and Ken Eastwood, host of The Morning Show on News Talk 1290. Thank you very much for spending some time with us.
Thanks, Richard. It's great.
I appreciate it. We'll talk again soon. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards. He'll be back soon. You're listening to News Talk Tonight.